In part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is Focus 580 host David Inge reminding you all the programs you hear on AM 580 are made possible by the financial contributions of our listeners.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. As the displaced of Katrina begin to settle into their new homes, whether permanent or temporary, the help pouring in from around the nation should be enough to meet their basic needs. But the next step will be harder. Millions of jobs have been lost to the storm. New Orleans' largest employer, Tulane University, hopes to reopen to students for the spring semester. The region's largest industry, tourism, can't give a timetable about when or if it will be back. The casino barges that helped revitalize the Mississippi coast are no more. The infrastructure around them is demolished. And as the floodwaters recede, traditional industries such as shrimping and agriculture have to deal with a stew of pollutants the storm has spread across the land and into the water. Right now, only insurance agents and construction workers seem to have guaranteed employment in the storm-damaged areas. Today on the show, we'll look at the employment future for Katrina's displaced, from teachers and professionals being welcomed into other cities to local entrepreneurs as they struggle to rebuild, to those who were already on public assistance. Later, we'll also visit Capitol Hill, where Congress returned for the fall session today amid recriminations over the disaster response and postponed hearings on Supreme Court nominee John Roberts. But first, Katrina's survivors on the job hunt. If you were displaced by the storm, are you looking for work where you're living now, or do you intend to rebuild what Katrina took away? And if your business is trying to hire storm victims, tell us about that. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. As thousands of evacuees are beginning to think about jobs, employers of those displaced are trying to pick up the pieces, too. Bart Bailey is the CEO of 3001 Inc., a satellite mapping company. He joins us by phone from their office in Gainesville, Florida. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Bailey.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn.
I understand you had three offices in the region. Is that correct?
We did. We had one in downtown New Orleans in Jefferson Parish. We had one at Stennis Space Center in southern Mississippi, and we have one at Mobile.
And so how badly were they damaged, and how were your employees affected?
We're still getting the reports on the offices. The one at Stennis appears it's probably all right, but they have no power, no communications. So we can't do any work there at that point. The one in downtown New Orleans, it appears it escaped the flood, so we didn't damage too much equipment there, but we're not being allowed to go in to use the facility. The one in Mobile came back up a couple of days ago. They've got power and they're fully operational.
Now, how many employees do you have, and are they all accounted for?
We have 150 employees in the company. We have about 100 of them were in the area directly affected. Of that 100, we still have two that we have not been able to locate.
Yeah. What is your greatest concern now, then? Is it?
My greatest concern now, well, other than the two employees that we haven't located, all the ones that we have located do have some sort of shelter. They're staying with family and friends. Biggest concern, though, is as we get the company back up and running, they need an infrastructure, they need houses and homes so that they're fairly convenient to where the workplace is.
Yeah, how do you begin to address these problems for employees? I mean, you're talking now about a workforce that has gone through losing homes, losing family. How do you begin to get them working again?
Most of them, as soon as they got their families situated, immediately wanted to know when and where they should be going back to work. Huh. So our managers at those various offices are in the process of moving contracts, moving equipment, and we've gotten from the geospatial mapping community, we've gotten great support, and we're getting interest-free, and we're getting loaners on some of the equipment and stuff.
Will all these people be able to go back to work as soon as they want to?
In our case, the answer is yes, because we had good disaster plans prior to the hurricane hitting. The bulk of what we do ends up being digital data that we have to do something with. We did daily backups, and then they were sent to another location. The trick is going to be matching the employees back up to the locations and having accommodations for them until they get back to permanent housing.
Yeah, and as I understand it, you are prepared to. What's the financial effect for this on your company? First of all,
well, last week we were probably down to 25% capacity. We're probably back up to 50 or 60%, and at this point, and provided the power comes back up at Stennis Space Center in southern Mississippi by the end of the week, at least equipment-wise, we'll be back up to 100%. The question will be, can we get all the employees to the right places? Our managers are in the process of trying to make that happen.
Can you keep paying everybody?
Yes, and we are at this point. A lot of the work that we do is completion-type work, and so we've got some very understanding customers that have pushed back the dates that we have to provide them some of our mapping products.
How does what you do fit into the overall economy there, and will you be affected by what's going on with other businesses in the area? Perhaps some haven't survived as well as yours.
We're one of in Louisiana. We're one of the high-tech industries that they have down there, and the community's been very proud of the work that our folks are doing down there and the jobs that we have. And we have no intentions of deserting the community. And one of the things that we're doing right now is we are flying the disaster areas with our aircraft and our sensors on a daily basis, and then we're shipping that data back up to FEMA and the Corps of Engineers for their use in the recovery.
So you're helping out.
So we're already helping out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there, I hate to say it, put it quite this way, but there are some opportunities for your company in this situation. I mean, on some level, some of the economy is going to have to be based on rebuilding, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I guess if there's a silver lining, it is that we got an extra mapping job out of it.
Okay. Well, Mr. Bailey, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Bart Bailey is the CEO of 3001 Inc., and he joined us by phone from his office in Gainesville, Florida. Businesses indigenous to the storm region, of course, have borne the worst of the burden. At the moment, Louisiana's oyster industry is entirely out of commission. Kurt Penagel is an oyster broker and the owner and operator of Gulf Island Seafood in Hopedale, Louisiana. He joins us by phone now from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Thanks so much for your time, Mr. Penagel.
How are you doing today?
How badly was your business affected, Mr. Penagel?
Well, we're still getting reports back in. There's no way to get back in to the St. Bernard Parish or Plaquemines Parish yet, but through talking to different people that are in the parish and flew over, my business personally, my dock isn't there anymore. I got a phone call this morning. Some rescue workers had passed where our location was, and they don't have a sign of it. They don't even have a brick left. In Hopedale, we purchase oysters in several different areas, from Plaquemines to St. Bernard, the most fertile areas for oyster harvesting. And in an Empire area that's been hit, so far the word is I lost two boats personally down there, and fishermen that work for me, the majority of them, have lost their boats, or if they did find them, they're in areas that they're going to have to, you know, get salvage equipment to get them.
Yeah. How many employees did you have in your company? How many boats?
Well, I'm a broker, so I have a lot of boats that fish for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, what I do is I have a dock or facilities where we unload in different areas, and I have fishermen with their boats that I purchase their product and turn around and resell them to processors.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how the people that work with you have been affected by the storm? Is anybody unaccounted for?
Nobody that's working for me directly. We thought we had some people that were missing, and people are popping up here and there. I've heard from several guys that work for me or sell their oysters to me. We thought they were missing, and we've heard from them in the last 2 days. So I'm sure there's a lot of casualties and fatalities. I would not be surprised if we lost some crew members.
We are talking about the economic fallout from Hurricane Katrina with Kurt Penagle. He's owner and operator of Gulf Island Seafood in Hopedale, Louisiana. If you'd like to join our discussion or if you have any questions about the economic recovery in the area of the hurricane, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Mr. Penagle, when do you expect you're going to be able to harvest oysters again?
In the area that was devastated from the east bank of the river to the Mississippi line, and I would assume Mississippi's wiped out too, the season was set to open on the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think now they'll open it at all this year. Number one is because of the pollutants out there. Also, the tidal surge has a habit of covering your oyster beds with mud and debris and storm grass, and more than likely what crop they did have, which was not a great crop this year, I think we were down 40% to 50% from what the biologist said. So I would assume they're not going to open up this year at all, and it takes about 3 years to recover.
3 years you're expecting?
Yeah, that's what I would. If you have a mortality of what I would assume, it could go up to 100%.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Mr. Penagle.
Okay.
Kurt Penagle is an oyster broker and the owner and operator of Gulf Island Seafood in Hopedale, Louisiana. He joined us by phone. We're talking about efforts to find jobs for people displaced by Katrina. After the break, we'll talk about how the region's unusual demography will make recovery especially difficult for many evacuees. If you are displaced by Katrina, what are your job prospects? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK or send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers and planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for higher education, lifestyle, and cultural clients. On the web at www.ratioarchitects.com. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
This is Talk the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away. For those displaced by Katrina, the biggest struggles are still the daily ones, settling into shelters or relatives' houses, searching for separated loved ones, finding schools for the children. But as the coming weeks and months of disruption in the region slowly become clear, people will need to look for more permanent housing and jobs. Today, we're looking into the employment situation for evacuees from Louisiana and Mississippi. If you had to flee the region, what are you doing for work? And if you're an employer, are you trying to help storm victims? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. The Mississippi Gulf Coast is one of the nation's poorest regions, and New Orleans was one of its poorest cities. For many of those forced out by the storm, job skills and steady employment were already hard to come by. To give us a more complete image of the region, we turn to Sheila Zaleski, director of the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Lynn. Glad to be here.
Sheila, let's talk about New Orleans, its demographics. The demographics are unusual for an American city, and in what way?
Well, they are unusual, and one quarter of the population of New Orleans live below the federal poverty level. That's about $15,000 a year for a family of three. And that's double the poverty rate in the United States and one of the highest rates for cities in the United States.
And give us a sense of who we're talking about. Give us an image of the poor of New Orleans.
Well, it is very important to understand who are the poor in New Orleans. Two-thirds of poor families are single mothers with young children. 9 in 10 are African American. And only half of the poor had jobs. So that means that a lot, i.e., about 1 in 3, were on public assistance or disability benefits. And 78% were receiving food stamps. 78% of the poor were receiving food stamps. That's quite a bit higher than anywhere in the United States.
Now, are we talking about the working poor, or are we talking about people who for the most part, were on receiving government assistance?
We're talking about all of the poor in New Orleans, whether they're working or not, young or old.
Yeah.
But two-thirds are mothers with young children or relatively young.
Now, obviously, race is part of this story. That's something that has been part of this story from the images we've been seeing on TV. The people who were affected in the most devastating way were not only poor, but black.
That's right. As I said, 9 in 10 of the poverty population in New Orleans is black, but two-thirds of the entire city population was black. So it is not unusual that we're seeing such a high percentage of people who have been affected by the storm who are African American.
What does this mean then if these people have been displaced and are being resettled in other cities, at least temporarily, possibly permanently? What effect is it going to have on those other states, those other cities?
Well, it's going to be very challenging. Obviously, poor families don't have many resources to fall back on. Many of these families were not working. And many depend on their broader family networks to survive economically. So I worry about to what extent will these families be able to be reunited in mm-hmm. one place back in New Orleans, or maybe if they're relocated.
Do the other places, Houston, for instance, taking a huge number of people, does Houston have the resources to take on this population?
Well, Houston is a little bit better off than New Orleans in terms of having a lower poverty rate and a higher rate of employed population. But obviously, this could make a big difference for Houston if families want to stay and try to find a job and try to get social services to get back on their feet. Mostly, I think families are going to have to turn to food stamps, the federal safety net, until they can get by with a private sector job or other family members helping them out.
We're talking about the economic fallout from Hurricane Katrina, the road to economic recovery, the jobless and those who are dependent on government assistance were before the hurricane and will be in the future. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And my guest is Sheila Zaleski. She's the director of the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Sheila, how then, there's so much that federal and local officials are trying to deal with now just in terms of recovering from the immediate effect of this hurricane. How then to begin to prepare for what's coming down the line in terms of people needing to earn a living, people needing money coming in?
Right. Well, obviously, the health of people affected by the storm is most important. But then looking forward to where will the jobs be? Will they be moved back, be able to move back to New Orleans or staying in their host cities right now? Many of the poor who were now in the shelters have limited educations and were working in service jobs in the New Orleans tourist economy. So they're finding a job is going to depend on whether they can find an employer who needs those same skills, obviously.
That tourism industry is in shreds now.
Right.
What about the other demographics of the region? Who else are we talking about besides the very poor? What else we have in terms of the working class? We were just talking with someone from the oyster industry. We have shrimpers. We have fishermen. We have an agriculture base there.
Well, you're right. I can only give you statistics on the poverty population when the storm hit. Obviously, when people lose their jobs, you'll create more poverty and more people needing food stamps and assistance and reliance on government safety nets until they can get back on their feet. It's really hard to predict how much the poverty population will grow, but it surely will for quite some time until the city is rebuilt.
Well, joining us now to discuss this is Ann Silverberg Williamson. She's the secretary of the Louisiana Department of Social Services, and she joins us from her office in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thanks so much for giving us your time today, Ms. Williamson.
Yes, thank you.
Perhaps you can tell us what the situation is there in terms of public assistance. Many of the people we've just heard who have been affected by the storm probably were on public assistance. What are you expecting? How are you expecting the storm's going to affect that in the future?
Our focus in Louisiana over the past few days has been both to ensure that we continue to meet the needs of those families who were previous recipients of our assistance, and also to make sure that we avail ourselves of those who are finding themselves in certainly a new situation of needing basic assistance such as food and nutrition.
And are people beginning to register, or are people beginning to seek public assistance from the shelters?
In order to be as responsive as possible, Louisiana arranged it such that previous recipients, for instance, of food stamp benefits, have automatically had their dollars uploaded to their electronic cards. Therefore, those in the shelters, those with families, those in other parts of the nation do not have to go without access to those benefits.
How's that working, the electronic cards? Maybe you can explain that to us.
Certainly. Just as many of us are familiar with debit cards or credit cards, Louisiana has a card such that it can be swiped through an ATM machine in a grocery store, and there are funds on that card that will ensure that their groceries can be paid for.
Yeah. And how are states working cooperatively, or are they working together?
We have had tremendous cooperation, support, and outreach by all states in this nation to ensure that displaced Louisiana citizens' lives are gotten back on track as smoothly and responsibly as possible.
Do you expect that kind of cooperation is going to continue into the future? I mean, you know, how difficult is this going to be as you go down the as the months go on?
Well, truly, the spirit of Louisiana is such that it's just our culture, it's our nature to give to one another, and we've been overwhelmed with the sentiment that has also been expressed by our fellow Americans in every state in this nation, and I have the faith that that will continue as long as Louisiana does need that assistance.
All right, we're talking about the economic recovery from Hurricane Katrina. We're going to take a call now from Tom. He's in Hudson, Ohio. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. Social Security checks should have been delivered on the 2nd of the month. I was wondering what's being done to make sure people get those. I was also wondering, are these people being screened after walking through all this filth? They've got a good possibility of having been exposed to hepatitis A and things like that. And where are they going to pump all this polluted, filthy water that's coming out of the city?
I don't know if all of our guests for this particular show can answer all those questions, but I think that Ms. Williamson might have an answer to a couple of those questions. Anne?
Okay.
Sure, absolutely. The first assistance I'd like to offer is that the following phone number, 1-888-524-3578. That's 1-888-LA-HELP-U will be a resource to address the Social Security assistance. The second thing that I'd like to explain is that evacuees who have been exposed to any situation wherein their health needs to be assessed are definitely being processed through medical assessment sites. We have three of those set up in the southeast part of Louisiana to assure that prior to going on to general population shelters, any health needs are met.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, Tom. Let's take a call now from Pat. She's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Pat.
Actually, it's a he.
Okay, Pat. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Yes, I'm on the board of directors of the National Association of Personnel Services. Basically, it's employment agencies. And we are having our national convention in a week and a half at Baltimore. We've already decided to have roundtable discussions on how we can mobilize our recruiting engine for both those that are out of jobs and, you know, possibly can never go back home and will need to be relocated, where we can work with our employers on a fee-free basis to get those candidates new jobs. And also, in reverse, to work with those companies that have lost their employee base to help them either find temporary workers or permanent workers on a fee-free basis. Now, we're not there yet. We're still in the organization phase. So I was wondering from your guests, how do I work with them to get the information to them once we're organized and once we have this website set up, not only in Louisiana, but for Alabama and Mississippi as well?
Ms. Williamson?
Well, certainly. We are absolutely focused on the economic revitalization, not only of the New Orleans area, but of this entire state, and are hopeful that we will be given the opportunity for any of our displaced citizens to find jobs right here in Louisiana, because we believe they have much to offer and that we have much to receive. I would encourage you, sir, to please reach out to our State Department of Labor. I'm sorry I don't have that direct line, but again, I believe if you dial the 888-LA-HELP-U, we would definitely be able to connect you with that appropriate resource. We do believe that we'll need to invest in workforce development and ensure that we do have jobs and the skills to match our citizens with those jobs.
How about getting in touch with employers, or getting at least the word out to employers in your area that there's this army of recruiters out there that's mobilizing to help help them find workers? Is there any suggestion you might have on how we may reach out to them?
Sure, maybe through the AFL-CIO. How does that sound?
That's probably a good start, yeah.
Great.
All right.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your call, Pat.
You're welcome.
We are discussing the economic fallout from Hurricane Katrina, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ms. Williamson, before this hurricane hit, there were plans for a lot of organizations, a number of charities, people involved in social services to go to Capitol Hill this week to lobby against federal cuts to food stamps and other federal assistance programs. What do you think is going to happen now? Do you think that these proposed cuts will be placed on hold as a result of this?
Well, certainly the momentum has increased, hasn't it, for the obvious critical importance of these services to our citizenry. And I believe that sound public policy's got to be preserved, and I believe that even more aggressive and innovative public policy approaches need to be given credence.
You know, it's interesting. You just said something that is interesting to me, because we've got a couple of emails here from people. Let me read them, and then I have a question for you. This is from Jordan saying, "This is my comment in reply to your request for employers seeking potential employees among the Americans affected by Hurricane Katrina. I have numerous client law firms in Las Vegas seeking associate attorneys in numerous practice areas, especially real estate, commercial litigation, labor, employment, and intellectual property." And then we have another email. We have a swimming pool service company in the Washington, D.C. area, and we're always looking for qualified repair technicians. Now, it's interesting to me that you mentioned that you're hoping that people are going to come back to Louisiana and find the jobs there.
Absolutely. Again, I've talked about the richness of our culture and the sense of identity that we have as Louisianans, and we are just, you know, so sorry that our citizens have been affected in this catastrophic way, and certainly have a vision for a future wherein that they will be able to definitely call Louisiana their home, call the New Orleans area their home, and be surrounded by a community that's even stronger than we were prior to Katrina, because we do have citizens with new skills, with sharpened skills, and we have communities wherein employment opportunities will await them.
In the meantime, do you think that people are perhaps maybe for the next year, things may not get back to normal? Are people going to have to think about moving elsewhere, even if it's only temporarily, and take up some of these job offers that may be out there around the country but aren't in that region at the moment?
We are doggedly and aggressively planning to create every opportunity in as short of a time as possible to create those jobs here and to create safe and stable housing for our citizens here. I do recognize, we all recognize, that this will be a process, one that, you know, we're informed by others who've gone through similar experiences that it could be 18 months, it could be 2 years. At the same time, our governor and we all have the vision for our state to be whole again, and as I said, even stronger, and we want to pursue that beginning immediately. We already have, and so we're focused on the short term as well as the long term, and in doing that as strategically as possible.
Well, great. Thanks so much for being with us, Ann.
Thank you, Lynn.
Ann Silverberg Williamson is the Secretary of the Louisiana Department of Social Services. She joined us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I also would like to thank my guest, Sheila Zedletsky. She's the Director of the Income and Benefits Policy Center at the Urban Institute. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
As the floodwaters are slowly pumped out of New Orleans, the count of the dead will go up and up. Evacuees who were glad to escape with their lives are now trying to figure out if they should return to their hometowns or make new lives elsewhere. More stories of lives changed by Hurricane Katrina later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
I'm Lisa Mullins. Reporters for PRI's The World help you understand America's role in every region of the globe. Our correspondents in the Middle East, Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Americas cover big-picture stories about war, politics, business, and culture. And we bring you personal stories about people affected by events in the news. We help you understand your world on PRI's The World.
Today at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. here on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Here are the headlines of some of the stories we're following at NPR News today. Engineers have plugged the levee break that swamped much of the city of New Orleans. Now workers are struggling to pump out the water, still as high as 7 feet in some places. And Egyptians go to the polls tomorrow in their first multi-party elections under a new and supposedly more democratic system. President Hosni Mubarak faces 9 other candidates, but is expected to win re-election handily. You can hear details on those stories and others later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow, as the floodwaters start to recede from New Orleans, we look into early evaluations of what went wrong and right in the local and national responses to Hurricane Katrina. Right now, we're talking about what the hundreds of thousands of people displaced by Hurricane Katrina are doing to find new employment. If you're unemployed, what are you doing? And if you're an employer trying to help storm victims, we want to hear from you, too. Join the conversation. Call us at 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. We're joined now by Jacques Soulas, owner of Café Degas in New Orleans, and he's currently at the home of his wife's cousin in Bentonville, Arkansas, otherwise known as the headquarters of Walmart. Thanks for being with us, Jacques.
Thank you.
Jacques, tell us about your situation. Seven of your family members had to...
Seven of us drove to Bentonville because of my cousin, and we've been here for now a week.
Yeah. Tell us what happened. Tell us about your restaurant.
Well, Café Degas is a rather small restaurant that is located about three blocks on Esplanade Avenue, three blocks from the fairgrounds. So sometimes you can even see the location whenever they pan around the fairgrounds. And about eight blocks or so from the New Orleans Museum of Art. It's about 1,800 square feet. We had about 35 employees. Last year, we served 55,000 meals. And we were grossing about $1.7 million a year.
And what about now? What is the story with those employees at this point?
Everyone is scattered. I understand from getting in touch with everybody that it is possible that two or three of my cooks had decided to stay behind, to stay in their homes, and we haven't heard from them. Through the website, I got a message from the mother of one of these guys, and she was extremely worried about him. And we haven't heard anything from him yet.
Jacques, what do you expect to do in the future? Do you plan to return to New Orleans? Can you even begin to think of what you're going to do?
Yeah, of course I want to return to New Orleans. It's my home. It's my history. It's what I've done. It's what I've enjoyed. My restaurant was really quite a viable place to work and live. For me, it makes sense to go back to New Orleans if there is some kind of economic viability about it. And we're talking a city where, you know, there's got to be more jobs coming back in. There's got to be people working again. My customer base was 80% local, about 20% visitors. My customers were the doctors, the professors, the engineers. Several of them worked, in fact, for the Army Corps of Engineers. The lawyers, all these people have got to have some kind of economic activity to even come back.
Yeah.
And eventually, if they come back, then I have an economic activity. Then I can start over. And so far, this is really where we're so worried, is whether there's going to be that kind of activity coming back.
And in the meantime, what do? Do you put down roots in Bentonville? Well, do you open a restaurant there or what?
Not yet. That's a little bit more. I would have to find some funds first. I've already put out some resume. I went to a number of people, and I got a job offer this morning as, more or less a consultant, if you will, to help opening up a new restaurant here in town. I'm also an artist. I paint, so I'm going to start painting on the square and try to find some kind of activity that way. I got really lucky. My kids are going to a great school over here, something that I could not imagine in New Orleans. And it's a public school, no less. And so I'm so fortunate with that I want to try to spend some time here.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Jacques.
You're welcome.
Jacques Soulas is the owner of Café Degas in New Orleans. We spoke to him from the home of his wife's cousin in Bentonville, Arkansas.
¶¶
Amid the chaos of Katrina and postponed Supreme Court confirmation hearings, Congress returned to session today. Helping the victims of Hurricane Katrina is obviously at the top of the agenda, as are angry questions about the muddled federal response. Earlier today, President Bush announced he will head an investigation into what happened. The Senate Governmental Affairs Committee will also hold its own hearings, according to a joint announcement today by Senators Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut and Susan Collins of Maine. Senator Collins asked why the lessons learned after the September 11th attacks appear to have done little to mitigate this new tragedy.
How is it possible that almost 4 years to the day after the attacks on our country, with billions of dollars spent to improve our preparedness, that a major area of this nation was so ill-prepared to respond to a catastrophe?
There have also been a number of proposals to aid the recovery effort in various ways. We're joined now from Capitol Hill by Representative Mark Foley, Republican of Southern Florida. He's no stranger to hurricane devastation. 4 touched down in his district last year. Thanks so much for being with us today, Congressman.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Now, you've introduced legislation to remove FEMA from the Department of Homeland Security. How much support are you getting for that, and why introduce that legislation?
Well, we'll see how much support I get. I've been asking for this effort for quite some time, even before the first hurricane struck Florida, because one of my concerns was when we rapidly tried to create an agency to provide comfort and safety for America, I was worried that, in fact, we would have created the ultimate albatross, which is a colossal bureaucracy that has to report too many chains of command to get a simple decision made. So I think in light of all the commentary on FEMA, on the response, and some blame needs to be shared by local and state governments, but at least at the moment, I believe, separating FEMA, creating it, and putting it back in the place it was to respond to these natural disasters would be a great step forward in trying to create, if you will, the agency that I think we all depend on and, frankly, we desperately need in these times of crisis.
Well, from your own experience with hurricanes in your state, what else do you think the federal government can do to be quicker in their response to this kind of disaster, more effective on the ground, and get there as soon as they're needed?
Well, I think it's pre-planning, and what I find regretful is that the local governments didn't do more to evacuate prior to the storm. There's no question we've all known, particularly in Florida, that with the hurricane season upon us, Max Mayfield from NOAA, a national weather organization, have all predicted that this would be an extraordinarily active storm. Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, did what was right and ordered evacuations far in advance of the storm so that there was an orderly departure from homes. That should be the norm, not the exception. People were waiting too late to leave New Orleans, despite the fact that it's long been known as a potential disaster area based on its location below sea level. So I think there has to be a lot more pre-planning. Clearly, there has to be more resources in place and ready. There has to be a greater coordination with the United States military, as evidenced by their rapid response once they were asked to join the effort. They then were able to get the convoys in necessary to help remediate some of the crisis that was unfolding before our very eyes. But the federal government does need to do more than just do modeling and planning. FEMA says over the last several months they've been studying the tsunami and its effect on the community and had an action plan ready for a comparable disaster. Well, they may have done the test drill, but they failed miserably in the real-life exercise.
Now, something else you've proposed is that you want to bring home National Guard troops from the affected areas. You want to bring them home from Iraq. Is that correct?
Without question. That has been my request of the president. And simply put, those men and women are deeply stressed about the unfolding disasters in their home. For your listeners' benefit, they do have Fox and CNN telecast in Iraq, and our troops are watching things back home. Those men and women who are deployed from the National Guard in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida are under a tremendous emotional strain, knowing that their children, Their loved ones may be homeless. They may not even know the status of those family members, and they could be a valuable resource to us back home, helping clean, strengthen our community, protecting property, helping stop looters. But I believe psychologically they'll be very little use to us in the theater in Iraq at this time, and out of compassion we should bring them home and let them help both secure their homes, their families, and more importantly, help their communities rebuild.
One other question. There was a whole slate of tax cuts about to come up in Congress. What's the fate of that of those tax cuts now, would you say?
Well, some need to continue. Capital gains tax reduction at 15% probably needs to continue to keep the economy vibrant. This is going to take a horrific toll on our economy. But I think any new taxes probably have to be postponed. And I hope, frankly, we strike an agreement on the estate tax. Doesn't mean full elimination, but it could mean a number that would mostly satisfy 90% of Americans. We have a huge bill that is going to come due for these natural disasters. We're talking housing, rebuilding of levees. We're talking about a massive infrastructure restoration project that's not going to come cheap. And so we have to be very, very prudent and very careful as we're allocating dollars that we not go too quickly on tax relief right now. We may be able to revisit that as we watch the economy carefully for signs of stress. But for the moment, I think our priorities have to be, rather than wrestling with the other side of the aisle over tax relief, more importantly, finding ways to solve the human suffering that's occurring in these states.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Congressman Foley.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Republican Congressman Mark Foley represents one of Florida's southern districts and joined us by phone from Capitol Hill. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining me now in the studio is Ron Elving, our NPR's Washington editor. Ron, thanks so much for being with us. Wanted to continue this discussion about what's going on in Capitol Hill. We just heard Congressman Foley say that some of the administration's agenda on tax cuts may have to be modified somewhat. How is all this affecting the president's agenda on the Hill and what's going on in Capitol Hill now?
Lynn, the first thing that's happened is that no other subject is really of relevance. No other subject is going to get an individual member of Congress any attention. Everybody is talking about this disaster that's overtaken the Gulf Coast region. And all the other things that people were coming back here with a full head of steam to do or talk about or push or resist, it's all put to one side. The only possible exception to that would be the nomination of John Roberts to the Supreme Court. And even that has been postponed into next week because, of course, of the death of the Chief Justice, William Rehnquist, and the decision by the president to nominate John Roberts to that job instead of to the other vacancy on the Supreme Court. So we are still talking about the Supreme Court. But apart from that, all other issues basically in a cocked hat at this point. Everyone is focusing on Katrina. And when there is an issue like that, when there is a moment like that in the history of Congress, such as after 9/11, really it drives everything else off the agenda and lasts for weeks, months, possibly longer.
Now, the president says that he is going to launch an investigation into the federal response. Plans in Congress also for an investigation. What will be the difference between these two investigations, would you say?
It's not clear what kind of an investigation the president has in mind. When he made that remark this morning, he was responding to a question about creating an independent commission, such as the 9/11 commission that investigated after the terrorist attacks. The president resisted the creation of that commission several years ago and then relented. He is again resisting the idea of needing an independent commission, saying in essence, we're going to look into why the response was slow and inadequate, and I'm going to lead it myself. So you don't really need to do anything else in the executive branch or outside the executive branch. Of course, the president knows that Congress will also want to have its own investigation and that, in fact, Senators Susan Collins and Joe Lieberman, that's the Republican from Maine, Susan Collins, and the Democrat from Connecticut, and Lieberman, have already begun the mechanics for having their own investigation. They are the chairman and ranking member, respectively, of the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, and they have the jurisdiction to investigate this. They are also two people who were largely responsible for setting up the Department of Homeland Security. And since FEMA is now part of the Department of Homeland Security, this is their baby in a way, and they are quite interested in how poorly all of this has gone, and they obviously want to dismantle it and get inside it and find out what happened.
Ron, remind us of some of the issues that have fallen by the wayside now, and do you expect them to eventually creep back onto the agenda, but in a different form, or will the fight be the same?
In the long run, of course, such issues as the estate tax or Social Security changes the president wants or immigration changes that the Republican Party would like to push, all of these things have been interrupted and postponed, but they'll come back eventually. We just don't know exactly when. In some form, I suspect Congress will talk about extending the elimination of the estate tax. Maybe it will not be totally eliminated, as Congressman Foley suggested, but something is going to be done on that front before we reach the expiration point for the elimination that was passed back in 2001. Some form of estate tax is probably going to survive. Also, the Social Security changes. In some sense, those are going to emerge from committee in the House, from the Ways and Means Committee. It'll be called something like retirement security. It will not be called Social Security reform so much. It'll be called retirement security. We'll see that before the end of the year. All these issues will come back. But what I don't expect is the big push towards enactment that the administration and the Republican leaders in Congress had hoped for in September and October because of this enormous, I won't call it a distraction, I'll call it a shift in focus for the entire government.
And this is going to be very, very costly. There's a wire report here that President Bush intends to seek $40 billion as the next installment for hurricane relief. That's got to change the way people are looking at these other economic issues on the Hill.
And that's on top of the $10 billion that emergency approval was gained for by Congress last Friday. I've seen the figure $100 billion. I've seen the figure $150 billion. That, for example, would represent a 50% increase in the national deficit unless some other revenue were going to be produced to make up the cost.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us today, Ron.
My pleasure, Lynn.
Ron Elving is NPR's senior Washington editor, and he joined me in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.
Support for NPR comes from National Geographic Magazine, featuring Africa's mosaic of cultures, environments, social issues, and resources in the September issue, on newsstands now. From the Everett Foundation, saluting the Alliance for Justice and its work to advance the cause of justice for all Americans at allianceforjustice.org. And from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
And this is NPR member station WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. You'll find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. And on our webpage, you'll find Hurricane Katrina announcements and resources. Champaign-Urbana is a long way from the areas directly hit by Hurricane Katrina, but it is a small world. Let me tell you that there will be a vigil for